Cheers.
From deep inside your radio.
From Norwalk, Connecticut, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, not Norwalk, California. I know. Sounds hard to believe. It's hard to say, but it's true. And first of all, before anything else, and there will be so much else, because this is part one of the year in rebuke. Yeah, I know. My voice can't make its own reverb. But first of all, thanks to everybody in Chicago who turned out or helped with the Harry and Judith Christmas show for the benefit of the Tipitinas Foundation. Two more of those shows this year, both in New Orleans this coming Saturday. So what better excuse do you need to fly on down to New Orleans, get some great food and help, and have a wonderful time with New Orleans singers and musicians. But I was in Chicago. It was a thrill. Imagine the thrill of being in Chicago and the whole, and now I'm going to do my impression of New York news anchors, when the whole Governor Blagojevich thing blew up this week. It was, you know, it was like, where it's at, baby. This weekend we learned that incoming chief of staff to the president-elect, not to be confused with the president-reject, who's just arrived in Baghdad for another surprise visit. I'll tell you what will make me impressed about the progress in the war. When nobody in this administration has to make surprise visits, when they can actually announce they're coming. Anyway, Rahm Emanuel, chief of staff to the incoming president-elect, is on some audio tapes chatting with Governor Blagojevich. And there's much being made of that this weekend, especially by the Republicans. And I have to say, ladies and gentlemen, you know, I don't know Rahm Emanuel, but I have had some dealing. I know nothing about Rahm Emanuel's ethics and whether he would or wouldn't be making a deal with Governor Blagojevich, but I have had some dealings with his brother, who's in show business. And so I'm very, very, very prepared today to vouch for the beauty of the Saugatuck River here in Norwalk, Connecticut. But, you know, there's a lot. One of the newspapers in Chicago actually put as its front page headline what everybody else was saying, which was, what was he thinking apropos of Governor Blagojevich? And I happen to know the answer, because Chicago is making a bid for the Olympic Games in 2016. Yeah, I know it sounds like a stupid idea. Why don't they just put the money in the river? But in trying to help that bid, Governor Blagojevich is trying to make synchronized bribing an Olympic event and is trying to show leadership in that regard. So hats off. And by the way, would you please donate the hat? Because he could use the hattage. While I was in Chicago, I saw a couple of interesting things. The economy is such that there are places and facilities that might normally rent or lease out pretty easily that, shall we say, aren't. And so there was a residential complex just outside Chicago that had a big sign to induce, patronage. Pets welcome. Pets welcome. And then right underneath, restrictions apply. And I'm thinking, okay, we'll take the front two legs. We'll take three legs. The fourth leg, that's out. We'll take the eating part. The pooping part is not welcome. What restriction? If they mean small pets welcome, you could say small pets welcome. But pets welcome. Restrictions apply. And the other thing that caught my attention, you probably, long-time listeners to this program probably remember, way last summer when a Chicago billboard firm owned by Clear Channel, are they bankrupt yet, refused to accept as advertising the cover art for my Grammy-nominated CD, Songs of the Bushmen, because it contained a picture of George Bush with a bone through his nose. However, and I don't know if it's part of the same company, but the company that handles advertising on the Chicago buses is not too proud to accept a big old ad on the back of the bus facing oncoming drivers for a Celtic band in Chicago called The Tossers. Google it. Just Google it if you want to figure it, if you need help figuring it out. The Tossers is okay, but Bush with a bone through his nose. Nah, that might bother people. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the year in rebuke, looking back in anger at what's gone on this past year. And, of course, there's been much talk all through the Bush administration about its approach to science in the latter days, in these latter waning moments, assuming they're going to leave, of the Bush administration, talk about more regulations, midnight regulations being put through that still ease up on the strictures that science might indicate on certain activities. And we did a special report on another aspect of that earlier on this year to be reviewed now on the year in review. Hello, welcome to the show.
From CPR, Continental Public Radio, this is What Up, Dog? What Up, Dog? CPR's new news blogazine for the young and the newsless. Thanks for multitasking us into your day. I'm Cody Outscoop. In today's Check It, Dude file, science. Not weird science or bad science, or science that she blinded you with.
Science!
But science. There are debates about science all around us these days. Global warming, stem cell research, endangered species, you know the drill. Up to now, the debates have been among scientists, lobbyists, and lawmakers. Today's guest wants to enlarge that list and perhaps broaden the debate. Quentin Charlatang is the executive director of the People's Science Initiative, and he's in the crib with us today. Quentin, welcome.
Thank you. It's hip in here.
Said. Exactly where does the People's Science Initiative fit into all these controversies I was referring to?
And many others.
Cool.
Well, we just feel, and by the way, I mean a lot of common sense folks that I talk to in the course of my job at the Common Sense Folks Foundation, we feel that the scientific conversation is being monopolized, you might say, by the people who happen to have advanced degrees. Hmm. You know, there's an old saying, Cody, war is too important to be left to the military. We feel science is too important to be left to the scientists. We know how wrong the so-called experts have been in our primary elections this year. Why should we trust them when it comes to the, I don't know, the age of the universe?
Well, there are those who will say that scientific knowledge isn't about trust, it's about evidence.
Cody, all due respect to them. But here's the deal. If evidence was so powerful, OJ would be in jail.
Word. So what exactly does your organization want to do to shake things up?
We don't think it's shaking things up so much as leveling the playing field and giving the guy who keeps his nose clean and plays by the rules a seat at the table.
That's like a metaphorical table. There isn't a real table in this scenario.
That's correct. But we believe the American people should have a voice and a vote about these issues that involve life and death, and sometimes life and death.
These would be the so-called life and death issues?
Yes, sir. The legislation we propose would require that any scientific issue that involves the spending of taxpayers' money, either to fix it or mitigate it, must be put to a vote of the people.
No, it would come up on the ballot at, the next congressional election?
We're letting the Congress people hammer out the details. But, yeah, that strikes me as the kind of detail they would, in this case, want to hammer in.
Mm-hmm.
There'd be, of course, a robust and vigorous debate, as kind we've had in the recent primary. Scientists would, of course, be in the mix. But so would affected parties, hardworking businessmen, ranchers, farmers, fisher people.
In other words, the whole gamut.
That's right, the whole gamut.
These would be, as you envision, a televised debate or 30-second spots or...
Or anything in between.
Hmm.
I think on these questions, Cody, the free market of ideas has been a little bit like a niche gourmet specialty shop, and we want to turn it into a big box superstore of ideas. And instead of these issues being settled behind closed doors at some panel or conference or deposition, they'd be settled out in the bright sunlight of democratic decision-making. I mean, who could be against that? I'll tell you who couldn't be against it is common sense folks.
You say this is in the form of legislation. Is it currently before, like, Congress?
There's a bill that has been introduced in the Senate by Republican James Imhoff and Democrat Joe Lieberman. We're trying to raise public awareness of and interest in the principle of public participation in these issues that so strongly impact on, who else, the public. It seems only fair to me, Cody, but hey, you know, sue me. I'm just kind of a common sense guy.
Quentin Charlatang, thanks for hanging with us this AM on What Up Dog.
Good to be in the mix.
PM in some areas. Tomorrow's just a few mouse clicks away, and that's when we are back with another posting of What Up Dog. Our thanks to the whole CPR News posse, and to the John and Melinda Fry Foundation. Fry is fly. Till the next one, I'm Cody Outscoop. Peace out. This is CPR, Continental Public Radio.
And of course, in the last couple weeks, that show's been canceled too. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time now for an occasional feature in this broadcast where the obvious becomes news. This just in. And indeed, this really qualifies. A report released this week by leaders of the Senate Armed Services Committee, a bipartisan group, said the top Bush administration officials, including Don Rumsfeld, you remember him, bear major responsibility for the abuses committed by American troops in interrogations at Abu Ghraib, at Guantanamo Bay, and other military detention centers. It wasn't a few bad apples. Really. The attorneys for the apples had no comment. The abuse of prisoners at Abu Ghraib, the report says, was not simply the result of a few soldiers acting on their own, but grew out of interrogation policies approved by Mr. Rumsfeld and other top officials who conveyed the message that physical pressures and degradation were appropriate treatment for detainees. Ah, but wait. A spokesman for Mr. Rumsfeld, Keith Urban, so close, just an H away from being a hit record maker, Keith Urban, said a dozen earlier investigations had found no such connection, and he dismissed this report as unfounded allegations against those who have served our nation, i.e., these guys wouldn't drink the Kool-Aid. Committee staff members said the report was approved by a voice vote without dissent, Republicans and Democrats, signed by Carl Levin, the Democratic chairman of the committee, and John McCain. I think you've heard of him. The report documents how the military training program called SEER, S-E-R-E, became a crucial source for interrogation techniques. The SEER training was devised decades ago to give American military personnel a taste of the treatment they'd get at the hands of the Chinese communists or the Soviet Union. The techniques were never intended to be used against detainees in U.S. custody, said Senator Levin. In his statement, McCain called the adoption of SEER techniques, quote, inexcusable. Only, 5 years along to learn that it wasn't bad apples after all. Oh, come on now. Don't blame the apples. They're such good guys. So, and there'll be more. There was another such jaw-dropper, and we'll hear about it moments from now. But there was, prior to the president's trip, surprise trip to Iraq this weekend. There was a trip to the Middle East to deal with certain issues earlier this year by a gentleman we have to visit via subterranean means here on the Year in Rebuke.
Next, intimate tales of America's first underground vice president. The action-packed diary of the man who's just a heartbeat away from history.
Dictating. Confidential. 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 At this point in an administration, you can't help looking back from time to time. Sure, I've made mistakes, everybody has. I thought a guy we rescued from a failing aluminum company like Paul O'Neill would have the good sense to keep his yap shut and not write some schoolgirlish tell-all book that, last time I looked, couldn't even crawl onto the 99-cent shelf. But no decision has made me any prouder than the one I made shortly after selecting myself as vice president to have nothing to do with the economy. As much as I'm not enjoying having to haul my secure undisclosed behind all the way over to the Middle East for my peace mission, I'd enjoy even less staying in Washington dealing with the plaintive bleats of a Wall Street crowd that's losing its nerve more quickly than Nancy Pelosi at a tailgate party. course, it's always a challenge to defend the proposition that in an entrepreneurial society, there are winners and losers. Well, most of the people you're talking to are the losers. But nobody said any of this would be easy, except for the part about Iraq. Speaking of which, our friend the Saudi king wasn't exactly welcoming me as Richard of Arabia. I had only the regular guest VIP bedroom at the palace, not the Vegas suite. Message received. But after he gifted me with the traditional Saudi headdress in which I regretfully refused to be photographed, his son, the prince, poured us some of that motor oil the Saudis call coffee, and we got down to splitting the short hairs. Tuesday, 10:17 a.m.
Your accommodations are to your satisfaction, Mr. Vice President?
Your Majesty, if I wanted to be someplace with only 34 cable channels, I could have stayed at home. Look, this is being billed as a peacemaking trip. Way I see it, it means Your Majesty has to help me make some peace.
Oh, Mr. Vice President, I've got something that's rising in value that you're paying for with something that's falling in value. Not a position of strength, I'm guessing.
You know, I'm kind of like John McCain. I'm still working on the economics thing. Seems to me if we're selling you jets, well, you subsidize the training of the next generation of Islamo-fascist extremists at so-called schools. Maybe we do have some chips on the table. Excuse me, Prince?
Yes?
Yeah. Another packet of equal, please.
Oh, we only have sweet and low.
You see, Mr. Vice President, even a great oil kingdom can't always grant every whim of the great visitor from the West. I'm making a connection between your coffee.
I know what you're doing. Here's what I'm doing. I'm betting that 18th century coffee table can have those little dings buffed away. Now, Your Majesty, this isn't something I like to do, but I've got some transcripts of wiretaps here. Come from our friends at the Secure Undisclosed Intelligence Agency. And the wiretap suggests your government really has no intention of establishing an embassy in Baghdad and appointing an ambassador to Iraq.
Sir, you insult both of us. You need no wiretaps to know that we're not going to do that. I told you that personally last year.
Yeah. Funny thing about me, I don't trust face-to-faces as much as I trust wiretaps. Mm. All right, look, we're pissing away the better part of $1 billion on an embassy building in Baghdad. Can't have much of a diplomatic row with just one embassy, can we?
Oh, I would have thought with what you were paying, you were putting up all the embassies in Baghdad.
You know something, Your Majesty? If I didn't like you so much personally, I'd be having some trouble right now not going over to the dark side on you. But let me suggest this. Mm-hmm. We've got a perception problem here. Any of us fly into Baghdad, it's a secret mission, ThreatCon 7 level security, the whole bit. Ahmadinejad flies into Baghdad. Trips announced weeks in advance. They're selling tickets to his appearances on the internet. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A perception problem.
And you think I can make it easier for you to visit Iraq?
No, sir. You can talk to the Iraqi government about making it look harder for Ahmadinejad to visit. More security, less publicity. Just the optics would help.
Maliki is not responding to you?
Nah, our plate's kind of full with him right about now. I think he might welcome hearing about this from someone else.
Well, Mr. Vice President, as you know, this is not a one-man government I am in charge of. I have a lot of cousins.
No, I know. Let me just say, we believe in the process. Well, now, speaking of perception problems, you know as well, you know better than I do that nobody's been more supportive to the replateauing of petroleum prices at an enhanced level than I have. But not even ExxonMobil can keep thriving when the whole economy's tanking around them. Gotta have a little more emphasis on the production side, don't you think?
Well, here again, sir. My country is but one member of OPEC.
Very big, important member.
And the production quota question is, as you know, quite complex.
Yeah. You know, King, I'm not the kind of person to make threats. Threats bore me. But if we have to give the same kind of military consideration to the other major oil-producing countries that we do to your country, just to get a vote to raise the quota, we might have to consider pushing that particular button.
That's all you want? A vote?
Not just a vote. A vote vote.
A vote vote? I'm sorry, sorry, I don't...
It's an Americanism. A vote in our favor.
And for that... No one else in OPEC gets our level of...
military consideration. It may be the highest form of respect known to civilized man. Shame to lose it. Hard to get it back.
Well, obviously my cousins and I have a lot to talk about tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And you shall have the full 200-channel package in your room.
Thank you, Your Majesty. If you want copies of the intercepts just for, you know...
I'm fine. We already have them.
It's easy to play it cool when you're sitting on $100 a barrel oil. We get it down to 80, and our friend Mr. Abdullah is going to start... singing the high notes again. End of partial diary for the middle of March 2008. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney. Confidential.
Confidential. Confidential.
It's Christmas time. You've got your hands full shopping for Christmas gifts for your employees, family, and loved ones. But who's taking care of you? Bloggo World, that's who. Hi, Tom Clay for Bloggo World, where your next career opportunity is just a mouse click away. Ever dreamed of running a children's hospital? How about a baseball team? What about being a United States Senator? Sure, to some people, these are just dreams. But at Bloggo World, we say there are 500,000 ways to make these dreams come true. And each one has a president's picture on it. Maybe you think that only rich people can afford the life-changing possibilities offered by Bloggo World. And you'd be right. But if you pass our stringent income and credit checks, and if you've got the courage to dream big, Bloggo World can open doors that were previously open only to qualified applicants. How about this? An Illinois Supreme Court appointment never before available. Comes with all the perks. Custom recorded office, attractive interns, you name it, it's here. The price, too high to mention on the air. You gotta call or log on to believe it. Not interested in judging lest you be judged. There are job opportunities galore in politics, sports, medical, executive careers, minority empowerment, even in the entertainment business. All made possible through the rock bottom line approach pioneered by Bloggo World. We make the connections. Our unparalleled after-sales service makes sure everything works. You take advantage of the advantage we take, and everybody's a winner. But deals this good can't last forever. The walls at Bloggo World are closing in fast. The job opportunities have got to move this weekend. If you can't make it over to Bloggo World, and you can't, call the easy-to-remember number, 1-999-EXPLETIVE, or slam your computer over to bloggoworld.fu. Sure, it's hard to remember. If it was easy, everybody would do it. You're not everybody. That's why the doors are opening for you at Bloggo World. We'll see you there. And now, ladies and gentlemen.
He's not a general. He commands no troops. He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an inspector general. Oh, yeah.
Well, the inspector general for the Pentagon has been busy again. It's almost as if he's got a lot of work to do. He says that Marine Corps generals and others in the Pentagon did not act to provide troops in Iraq with heavily armed vehicles to protect against IEDs. No, not birth control devices, improvised explosive devices, despite urgent requests from them from Marines on the ground in Iraq. I'm telling you, this just in. Yeah. What else does he say? He says the Department of Defense knew about the dangers of IEDs and the availability of mine-resistant vehicles long before insurgent actions began in Iraq in 2003. That's not an insurgency. Those are dead-enders. The report shows that in February 2005, field commanders in Iraq sent an urgent, universal need statement. Well, that's easy to ignore. It only has the words urgent, universal, and need in it. Requesting the heavily armored vehicles. In June of that year, the commandant of the Marine Corps recommended replacement of the unarmored Humvees with an up-armored version of the same vehicle, not the highly protected MRAP. At the time, they said it was the best available, most survivable asset to protect the Marines. Now, the Pentagon says it will order up to 10,000 of the MRAPs, which are supposed to be more protective. But wait, there's more from the Inspector General of the Defense Department. A Defense Department project supposedly designed to channel to support U.S. troops was instead used to channel millions of dollars to personal friends and allies of its chief. And no, he wasn't Governor Blagojevich. The America Supports You program was led in a, quote, questionable and unregulated manner, according to the IG. At least $9.2 million chicken feed. We're throwing away billions here. What are you bothering me with these millions? Was inappropriately transferred by the project's managers. Much of that money served only to further promote America Supports You instead of assisting actual members of the military service. The program grew from its relatively minor start in 2004. Pro-troop rallies were organized, special wristband and dog tags were made, special edition comic books were printed up, processions were held on the National Mall, Sesame Street characters made DVDs that encouraged families with young children to talk about overseas deployments, and ASY, America Supports You, began to spend millions not to help the troops, the Inspector General says, but to help itself. In 2006, $165,000 went to a pro America Supports You concert aboard the USS Intrepid in Manhattan, and $15,000 went to actor and musician Gary Sinise's Lieutenant Dan Band. The report calls these questionable and unregulated actions. From 2004 to 2007, the chief of the program, Armed Forces Information Service Director Allison Barber, funneled almost $9 million in contracts to a public relations firm called Susan Davis International to set up the myriad events and to promote the ASY brand. Davis's executives made as much as $300,000 to $600,000 a year. Paying a public relations contractor annual salaries approaching $750,000 does not appear to be a cost-effective means to support the program and the warfighter, according to the IG. But what made it even less cost-effective was that PR executive Davis, Susan Davis, was a friend of the head of the program, Barber, and a well-known Republican operative. This according to former Defense Department lawyer Diane Beaver. I say leave it to her. Another $500,000 went to media consultant Mitch Semmel. We'll look for D.L. Hughley to make fun of that next week. Also, Barber used the Stars and Stripes newspaper as a kind of money laundering service to pay Davis and Semmel. The paper is partially financed by the Pentagon, despite the fact that Stripes has a decade-long tradition of independence, now stained by this involvement. Oh, and also this just in from an inspector general, an unpublished 513-page federal history of the American-led reconstruction of Iraq depicts an effort crippled before the invasion by Pentagon planners who were hostile to the idea of rebuilding a foreign country and then molded into a $100 billion failure by bureaucratic turf war, spiraling violence, and ignorance of the basic elements of Iraqi society. This is history in draft form in Washington and Baghdad, produced by the Department of Defense's Inspector General. In one passage, Colin Powell, gutsy guy, is quoted as saying that in the months after the 2003 invasion, the Defense Department, quote, kept inventing numbers of Iraqi security forces. The number would jump 20,000 a week, unquote, Colin Powell. Would have been nice of him to say that publicly, don't you think? Yeah. His assertion that the Pentagon inflated the number of competent Iraqi security forces is backed up by former commander of Iraq troops Ricardo Sanchez and L. Paul Jerry Bremer, the viceroy of Iraq under our occupation. Among the overarching conclusions of the history is that 5 years after embarking on its largest foreign reconstruction project since the Marshall Plan, the U.S. government still has in place neither the policies and technical capacity nor the organizational structure that would be needed to undertake such a program on anything approaching this scale. And the hard figures on basic services and industrial production compiled for this report reveal that for all the money spent and promises made, the rebuilding effort never did anything more than restore what we destroyed in the invasion. A couple more IGs, then we get back to the year in rebuke. The controversial new federal acquisition regulation rule regarding contractors requires them to disclose government overpayments and their own criminal contracting violations. It went into effect this weekend. That's right. Turn yourselves in. Company executives must disclose to the inspector general of the agency with which they have a contract as soon as there is credible evidence that the company or one of its employees has violated contracting regulations. So watch for that. They'll be turning themselves in because it's a regulation. And the design of the holsters that armed commercial pilots use to stow their weapons on board aircraft increases the likelihood of accidental discharge of the weapon, the inspector general for the Department of Homeland Security has concluded. They recommend that TSA discontinue the use of the locking holster and consider other ways for armed pilots to secure their weapons. Yes, we have to put our liquids in 3-ounce bottles, but they've got a weapon whose holster design renders it vulnerable to accidental discharges if improperly handled. News of the Inspector General. Inspectors General, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. There was a big controversy earlier this year, started by a New York Times revelation that military analysts for the television news channels and news broadcasts also had lucrative contracting deals, speaking of contracting, with military defense companies. Deals, involvements that were never mentioned on the air and that may have inclined them to overly supportive words about Pentagon policies that might involve increased contracting. A broadcast right here looked into that. We'll review it right now here on The Year in Rebuke. I say right now on The Year in Rebuke. All right, that machine is recalcitrant, but this one won't be. Right here on The Year in Rebuke. Well, one of these machines will work.
It's all in all. All in all, CPR's weekly attempt to bring what's behind the news in front of the news and leave it there. I'm Aviva Schlarman in Washington. This week, the Department of Defense announced it would stop giving special briefings to the military analysts who appear in television news networks and here on CPR. The New York Times has reported that those briefings were designed to spread the Pentagon's view of the Iraq war under the guise and gals of independent analysis. CPR special correspondent Milton Getzler has been talking to our own military analyst, retired Major General Oliver Kilman, about these briefings. And here's his report.
You've heard General Kilman on these microphones perhaps hundreds of times, but never before in his new role as CPR's military analysis analyst. General Kilman, welcome back.
Thank you, Milton. You got new drapes.
The studio has been freshened up a bit. Yes, sir. General Kilman, how do you analyze the Pentagon's decision to end its briefings for military analysts?
Milton, I look at it the way I look at any military campaign. That's really only one of two perspectives I can use, frankly.
Just out of curiosity, what's the other one?
Whether it helps my company land a defense contract.
Well, I think we'd agree you've chosen the appropriate way of looking at it.
I think so. So the Pentagon has, had an objective to counter what it viewed as the overly negative view of what the Pentagon does. Its target was hearts and minds, a target folks in the military have some familiarity with, the only difference being these hearts and minds belonged to our own populace.
So a closer, more familiar target.
That's right. You could look at the briefing program, therefore, as a classic pincers maneuver. in which the analysts were not two, but several dozen pincers, individual pincers, all approaching the target from different vectors.
Mm-hmm. Those vectors being the various networks and channels and so forth?
Yes, sir. Now, the A-154 is a perfect vehicle for this mission.
What is the A-154?
It's a briefing jet.
So it's neither a bomber nor a fighter nor a cargo aircraft?
Negative, sir. It is a briefer. It carries usually a payload of about 35 analysts and 10 PIMs.
And PIMs are weapons?
Well, in this particular campaign, sir, you could call them that. They're population influence modulators. By design, each of them is responsible for no less than 1 million human influenciation episodes, or HIEs, each week.
These are machines?
They're humans, sir, at least at this stage of the technology. They're what the press calls briefers, but since that's what the military calls aircraft in which the analysts are flown to their PIOs, or private impression opportunities, the men and women are differentiated by the previous acronym.
PIMs.
Yes, sir. So the A-154s are deployed on an as-needed basis to fly the MAs.
Military analysts.
Yes, that's correct, Milton. To fly them to FSVs, with forward staging venues, in Iraq and Washington, occasionally in Afghanistan, wherever there was a need to engage in forward staging.
Which is?
Well, that's basically a fully prepared information battleground that's in proximity to current combat ops.
Ah, and are those CCOs?
Or what CCOs?
Current combat ops?
I've never heard that, no, sir.
And these are the places where the military analysts are shown signs of positive achievements, progress, that sort of thing?
They're exposed to carefully calibrated levels of PMIs.
Oh, sorry to get caught up in all this terminology.
That's just a military way, Milton. Those are pre-understood military infons. An infon is a unit of information. Briefers would work in platoons of twos and threes, mutually reinforcing the inputting of the infons. The operation would normally take several hours.
And then back in this country, the analysts would complete the mission?
Mm-hmm. By swarming the target in areas of opportunity, such as networks, op-ed pages, anywhere the target might be lurking. The mission had a high level of success in its early operations. Over 10 million infons were successfully migrated onto the target population during just the first 3 months of Operation Brain Rush.
That was the first operation in this campaign?
That's correct.
Well, I must admit, that's an awful lot of infons.
250,000 on this network alone.
So, with that kind of success in the background, why is the military abandoning the mission now?
Well, as I understand it, Milton, and obviously I haven't been thoroughly briefed on this yet, but my sources tell me the mission remains constant. It's just this particular way of attacking it has been human resource intensive.
Mm-hmm.
There have been some loose marble problems. And so there's been a massive technological upgrade. The target population remains constant. They'll be dealt with stealthily.
How would that operate?
As I understand it, via the food supply.
General Kilman, the question we've kind of been avoiding during this interview, as an analyst of this kind of thing, is it a good idea for the Defense Department to be engaged in such activities targeting, as you yourself say, the civilian population of its home country?
Well, Milton, your home country is your first line of defense. You could think of local population as the legs undergirding the military table. So anything that can strengthen that undergirding is just going to increase the ultimate strength of the overgirding.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, the only way I can evaluate good or bad is in the context of my other analytical prism. Does it help my company get defense contracts? And I'd have to say, frankly, any expenditure by the Defense Department is helpful from that point of view.
General Kilman, as always, thanks for your time.
Oh, I'm billing for it.
Even so, thanks.
Thank you.
On our back page this week, yet another book about success in the business world, but this one is a guide to success in a much more difficult economic environment, book editor Ira Zipkin reports. Until 2 months ago, Robert Craddock was CEO of a premier Wall Street investment bank, Hill Bornstein Hill. Then he made what the business channels described as an unceremonious exit as his firm announced losses of $30 billion in the subprime mortgage mess. Now he's back with a new book, Ride the Brown Parachute. Bob Craddock, this is a guide to success from a man who was forced to resign after his company suffered staggering losses.
Well, you have left out one important detail, Ira. I departed Hill Bornstein Hill with a severance package valued upwards of $60 million, and I didn't have to face a lot of angry stockholders at the June meeting. I think that qualifies as a win in a lot of people's books, not just mine.
Good point well taken. Yeah. So what is the brown parachute theory of executive success?
Simply that different rules apply in a down economy, specifically when failure's all around you. The only way you can stand out, as in a time when success is all around you, is by doing it bigger.
You're saying fail bigger.
I'm saying go for it. The bigger mess you get your company into, the more value there is to your company in dispensing with your services.
That's the brown parachute.
Exactly.
But isn't dragging your company into more debt and more losses bad for the overall economy?
Exactly the opposite. When Hill Bornstein Hill collapsed, two good things happened, Ira. On the micro level, the Hill brothers had to start talking to each other again because they didn't have Bornstein to act as an intermediary anymore. But on the macro level, this was a company that could have limped along for many more years using economic resources that could be better utilized if diverted elsewhere. The faster you can take such an enterprise down, the faster the resources are successfully reallocated.
So this is the creative destruction we hear economists talking about?
That's right. And riding the brown parachute basically means nothing more than being the human face of that force of creative destruction.
So in a way, you're saying to the investors who lost money investing in your firm that that money is better off somewhere else now, even if it's in your investment fund.
What I am saying, Ira, is if you look around, my story's not unique. The people who presided over the biggest subprime losses, let's say, are the people who left their firms with the most generous severance packages. This is the economy rendering a judgment on the value of their no longer providing their services. I just gave it a catchy name.
You certainly did. Ride the Brown Parachute is in bookstores, and there's a chapter of it on our website, cpr.org. I'm Ira Zipkin in Washington. And for now, that's all from All in All. Had help today from the Lipschitz Foundation, helping to build a world where no name is funny, and from the Corporation for Potluck Broadcasting. Next week, we dig down beneath the tip of more icebergs in the news on All in All. I'm Aviva Schlorman. Enjoy it all. This is CPR, Continental Public Radio.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week. Well, some of them really are sorry, like Richard Cizik, the longtime Washington lobbyist for the National Association of Evangelicals, the largest evangelical organization in the country. He resigned this week after igniting a firestorm in the evangelical world by vowing support for gay civil unions in an interview with National Public Radio. They still have that? In an interview with Terry Gross, Cizik responded to a question about gay marriage by saying, quote, "I'm shifting, I have to admit. In other words, I would willingly say I believe in civil unions." Even evangelical figures who'd supported his environmentalism on environmental activism were troubled by the comments. "I don't know what was going on in his head," says the editor of Christianity Today. According to a statement posted on the evangelical website, Cizik acknowledged that he misspoke during the NPR interview. He has subsequently expressed regret, apologized, and affirmed our values, but there is a trust loss in his credibility as a spokesperson among leaders and members, i.e., goodbye now. Now, let's move to Illinois, where a former governor is sorry. Quote, "I must say something I've known in my heart has been a long time coming, and that is a truly heartfelt apology to the people of Illinois. It has been a difficult journey for me to get to this point, as I truly believed in my service to the people, but it was less than my best, and for that, I am sorry. I want to make things right in my heart with God, with my family, with those I have hurt. As a former public official, a husband, a father, and a grandfather, I apologize. Even though I cannot undo my mistakes, I hope I can restore some faith in your hearts and minds by opening up and sharing these thoughts." This is, in fact, ladies and gentlemen, Governor Ryan, former Governor Ryan of Illinois, hoping for a commutation of a sentence. Because he's in where three of the last eight Illinois governors have ended up a place that makes its own ice. Deadline New Delhi, in a rare display of unity, government and the opposition on December 11th spoke in one voice on tackling terror. Parliament adopted a resolution against the Mumbai attacks, and Prime Minister Manmohan Singh apologized to the nation that the carnage earlier could not have been prevented. But wait, there's more. And this is one we love, of course, because this is your brain on the war on drugs. Dateline Lawrenceville, Georgia. Many people's biggest fear is a breaking into their house, whether it's a criminal or the other kind. A Lawrenceville family's home was raided by police. They did nothing wrong. Gwinnett County Police say an investigator pointed out the wrong house to a team making entry for a drug bust. They say it was a mistake and apologized to the residents, but the apology isn't enough for the homeowner. Somehow there was an investigator that had been working closely with the case that mistakenly pointed out the wrong house, the wrong location, said Corporal Ileana Spellman, saying it was human error. We apologize. It was definitely our mistake, and we regret that it occurred. Corporal Spellman says the police department has a strict policy on no-knock entrance without a search warrant. We double-check the address. There's a description of the location as well as an address of the house that we're looking at on the search warrant. Oh, they have a warrant. And we always have someone double-check that every time, except, of course, for this time. And yes, no-knock searches were controversial when they were first introduced. But we got them now. Dateline Anchorage, Alaska, Governor Sarah Palin's home church has been badly damaged in a suspicious fire. Larry Kroon, the pastor of the Wasilla Bible Church, estimates damage at more than $1 million. He declined to say if the blaze was politically based or directed at Palin. Palin spokesman Bill McAllister said the governor stopped by the church Saturday morning and apologized if the incident was related to her. She apologizes if the incident is in any way connected to the undeserved negative attention the church has received since she became a vice presidential candidate on August 29th. Whatever the motives of the arsonist, the governor has faith in the scriptural passage that what was intended for evil in some way be used for good. So I guess they're going to put that new paneling in the church. The Mexican December edition of Playboy magazine has come under fire for mixing nudity with the religious, specifically the depiction of a nude Virgin Mary on the cover. Who knew there was who knew there was Playboy still, let alone a Mexican Playboy? That may be why they did this. To millions of Christians throughout the world, not to mention the predominant Roman Catholic population of Mexico, this was sacrilege. The image was of a nude brunette standing before a stained glass window with a simple white covering draped over her head and shoulders. The caption reads, "We adore you, Maria," in Spanish. It hit the newsstands the day before the celebrated pilgrimage to the Shrine of the Virgin of Guadalupe in Mexico City, one of the most notable Roman Catholic icons, the second most visited Catholic shrine in the world. Raul Sarroyes issued an apologetic statement. The image is not and never was intended to portray the Virgin of Guadalupe or any other religious figure. The intent was to reflect a Renaissance-like mood on the cover. Yeah, that's where I go for my Renaissance images. Mexican Playboy. And skincare company Hydroderm has apologized to Terry Hatcher and has retracted allegations that the Desperate Housewives star endorsed a rival product. Terry Hatcher is a woman of the highest integrity. We apologize sincerely for the adverse publicity resulting from our lawsuit. So Hydroderm spokesman Joshua McCleary. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And earlier this year, while the vice president was making peace in the Middle East, the president made his, I think this was his first, certainly his last visit as president to I'll have to check with Governor Palin, either the country or the continent of Africa. We relive it now on the year in rebuke.
Ranching Eagle. Hey, 43, welcome back to Terra Americana. Hey, 41, that's one Terra we don't have a war on. Yeah, pretty good trip to Africa. I guess it showed you don't have to be a Barack Hussein Obama to care about black people.
No, message, you cared. Came in loud and clear. Well,
Not so loud, really, unless that campaign coverage. Really a lot.
Yeah.
Kind of made it hard to find the coverage of your trip. But when Barr and I could, it was just so inspiring to see you there, helping that whole element.
Yeah, it was inspiring. In other words, I drew inspiration from the trip, 41. And it's such a good return on investment.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, the malaria aid and the AIDS aid. Mm-hmm. In other words, for about what it would cost us to give one New Orleans family a trailer without those fumes that they're bitching about now, we can inoculate 2,000 babies in Tanzania.
Yeah, the folks over there sure seem grateful.
Well, that's just it. See, that's what Condi was saying before we started this project, that they've been so accustomed to getting so little from this good country over all these years. I'm going to be a hero just for showing up.
Well, hey, listen, Sprout, with popularity ratings like you've got here.
Well, not that I pay attention to the polls.
But seriously, good to be a hero anywhere these days.
Yeah.
Even someplace. You ever notice this, that the whole continent kind of looks like one big bad neighborhood?
Yeah, they're good people working hard, trying to build a democracy the hard way, one corrupt dictatorship at a time. But, I like them. Very fertile ground for the gospel, incidentally. A lot of good Christian people whose only mistake was they happened to be born, differently colorized.
Yeah.
But, boy, it's good to be back at the ranch.
Oh, I bet. Warm and sunny down there.
Yeah. Kind of getting nostalgic about the place.
Really? Serious about selling the ranch, are we?
Hey, if it was up to me, whole different ball game of wax. But I'm just going to be the ex-president.
Tell me about it.
And Laurie's really adamant about moving to the big city.
Oh, yeah? Where she want to go?
She wants us to get a house in Paris.
House in France? That's kind of different for
Paris, Texas.
Uh-huh. Got a little NATO summit coming up next month.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Got to put my geostrategic thinker cap on. Got one of our good allies here at the ranch this weekend.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Who's left?
Prime Minister of Denmark. You know his name.
Rasmussen?
Yeah, same fella. Good man. We took him mountain biking around the ranch, and I'll tell you something. For a European, he's in pretty darn good shape.
I think the new generation over there getting more like us in terms of physical fitness, cosmetic surgery, the whole deal.
Well, he's a tough son of a gun. They got this, quote, independent investigation of our rendition flights into Greenland, and I'll give him this. He's kind of stubborn on the matter of them staying, quote, independent.
Think I told you, the company wasn't going to appreciate getting roped into that whole enterprise, flying detainees around to Syria and such for improved interrogation.
Enhanced? And you didn't tell me any such thing.
Yeah, thought it. Maybe I didn't say it.
And the CIA people did seem absolutely enthusiastic when the Chainster told them they had this account.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, son, the good news is any investigation of anything that's launched now, results won't be in until you're safely home in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God for the 22nd Amendment, in a way.
Hey, look, nobody appreciates the onset of female suffering more than I do. But look here, 41, be great if some of your old colleagues at the agency got the word that this would be a pretty good time to fall in their bullets and take a sword for their president.
And their vice president.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about this much. It just amazes me in a way. Remember when I was Ronald Reagan's vice president, the idea that the agency would get its marching orders from the vice president would have been treated as some kind of joke.
It would have to come from the president?
No, chief of staff, but certainly not the vice president.
Well, that's good progress.
Saw you didn't fall far from the tree this week.
You saw what now?
Well, we reacted with surprise that the news gasoline is approaching $4 a gallon.
Oh,
that's one of your old man's tricks, isn't it? Being out of touch with the real economy. Remember when you gave me hell about the supermarket scanner and the only people who knew about those things were the gals? Last time I looked, all demographics use gasoline.
I was getting to the end of a very long press conference, starting to wish I was back in Tanzania. Something just very uplifting about seeing so many happy black people in one place. So kind of got in late on the reporter's question is all. Believe me, 41, I am very well informed on the price of gasoline. And the last time I looked, all the demographics used food, too. So, no, I don't think I'm doing a reprieve of the old man's out-of-touch routine. No way, Jose. Or, as Jose would put it, no S way.
Okay, 43. Well, have fun at the ranch. That's from Barr.
Yeah, I figured.
You take care.
You too.
Ladies and gentlemen, apropos of the India-Pakistan problems, a former high-ranking Pakistani intelligence official denied this week that he had given advice and support to a Pakistani militant group linked to the attacks on Mumbai. Retired Lieutenant General Hamid Ghul, former director of the ISI. India is seeking his arrest, along with several other Pakistanis. Ghul was considered a political patron of the group that whose members may have contributed to the stuff in Mumbai. A Pakistani official who wouldn't be quoted acknowledged Ghul is widely viewed as the godfather of Pakistani policy that used guerrilla groups, some would say terrorist groups, such as Lashkar-e-Taiba, as proxies in the conflict with India over Kashmir. But Pakistan has declined to hand over Ghul because he has no role in setting the operational agenda of those organizations. Ghul has acknowledged he once was a member of a group of retired ISI officers, Pakistani scientists, and others suspected of giving material support to the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. Ghul has been placed on a U.S. watch list of global terrorists along with several others. U.S. officials are targeting him, he says, because he has publicly expressed his political support for Taliban and Afghan rebel groups. He says, I simply fail with to understand what the hullabaloo is all about. It's simply because I speak loudly about the fact that 9/11 was a bloody hoax, Ghul says. It was an inside job. From our friends in Pakistan. And the Bush administration plans to sign a nuclear cooperation agreement with the United Arab Emirates. Its largest trading partner is Iran. Just thought you should know. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe. You send 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant just blocks away from us here. 7.415 megahertz shortwave. On the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, available as a free download for members at www.audible.com/theshow and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And to be just like everybody learning to pronounce Blagojevich, if you would agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast and other valuable info available at harryshearer.com. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego, Chicago, Pittsburgh, and Hawaii desks, and to Clark and the gang here at Cox Radio in Norwalk, Connecticut, for making today's show possible. More Year in Rebuke coming up week after next. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions that originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.